for those tough wake-ups.
Stats are misleading.
It's Marsh and Mello.
Major foul.
Wake up to serious sports talk.
He fists it!
It's Marsh.
The CFL, baby!
And Mello.
I love Canada.
It's Marsh and Mello.
This is football!
For those tough wake-ups.
They're heating up!
It's Marsh and Mello.
Coming your way, Hamilton.
Wake up to serious sports talk.
Gas tank gonna be full!
It's Marsh.
In Canada.
And Mello.
Why not, eh?
It's Marsh and Mello.
Thank you, Canada.
Everybody's doing it. It is Marsh and Mello. Happy Friday, everybody. Friday, May 7th. May the 7th be with you. Is that how that works?
No, it doesn't work.
Oh, okay. Welcome to the show. As always, we appreciate you being here, and we appreciate our good friends at Fox 40, the worldwide leaders in whistle technology, supporting us for 15% off all your return to play whistle needs. You can visit fox40shop.com and enter the code CFP15. We're also very excited to be having another month here with our good friends at Sawdust City Brewing. The promo code has been extended into the month of May. If you want your beer, get it from Sawdust City Brewing Company. It's offering brewery fresh beer delivered directly to your door. Visit their website at sawdustcitybeer.com to shop their wide variety of brews and to learn more. And of course, you can use the promo code, as I say, CFP during checkout and receive free shipping on all orders over $100, shipping available to Ontario residents only, and you must be of legal drinking age. We had some fun with the Sawdust City beers during the CFL draft live stream back on Tuesday night, Kyle.
Yeah, we did. It was a fun time. Connor Wade, myself and you towards the end of the broadcast, I hopped on and, I was watching the broadcast and, Connor Wade and obviously yourself know so much about Canadian football, but even more so this year, I think it was more important to have some, sort of knowledge with these guys because we couldn't get, perspective kind of on what these kids were because there was no U Sports season. So I think it was important that you guys came to the table with insightful and smart analysis.
I appreciate that. I think there was a lot of people doing good work, whether it was on social media, on websites, this was the year of guerrilla marketing when it came to the CFL draft. And I saw the note from 3Down that the viewership was down somewhere around 20%. And to me, it was like, well, what else are you going to expect when there's no build up, there's no hype, there's no lead in? A lot of the names people don't know. And that's the thing that I say every year I'd like to change. And I think we're getting closer to that, which is whether it be the CFL or if it be TSN or whoever is the broadcast partner, being able to invest in the storytelling before you hit draft night. Because Dwayne Ford, if you were to say to Dwayne, hey, here's a bunch of money. We want you to do profiles every other day. We need a new profile. We need you to do 50 profiles over 100 days leading up to the draft. How much better would the draft be? Like when we got names called, it wouldn't just be people going, oh, okay. It wouldn't be people saying, hey, that kid's from around the corner. He must be good. You would actually already know more about that player. And I think Dwayne's the person to do that, but hell, I'd do it if nobody wants to, attack that. Cause I think it'd be super fun to, and the thing that bothers me in full transparency, and I said this to a couple of people that work in the CFL this past week, is that I want every year to watch more film. Because the best way to understand somebody is to watch film, like unquestionably to put the time. There's no replacement for hard work. There's no replacement for doing the groundwork. And that is a rule that stretches across all different parts of work, life, family, otherwise is there's no replacement for the actual work getting done. I want to do that work. I just always find I never have the time. Like I never have the ability or it never works into the schedule enough. And that's always frustrating to me when we get to draft night because I trust what I see and I know what I see and I know how to describe it. It's just, man, I want to be able in the future, like to somebody give me an opportunity to be able to do that and actually invest the time because make it worth your while. And this is not me grandstanding for a job. This is just me thinking out loud that every year I want to do more film and every year it doesn't work because it's not the main thing that I'm working on. And I'd love for it to be the main thing because I think there's a real, real opportunity there.
Yeah, and they better tell the story of these athletes, right, coming into the Canadian Football League. And I think it's important to not only watch tape and see what they can do on the field, but off the field as well. Like, for example, and we've always talked about this too, right, where sometimes the parameters or the rules of entering the Canadian Football League draft are a little bit wonky. It's like David Ungerer I still don't know what his tie to Canada was when he got drafted, but we figured it out, right? And then it's like Jake Burt, right? Gets drafted first overall by the Hamilton Tiger Cats. I had no idea he was born in Canada.
Yeah.
Right? He was born in Regina. His mother is from out east, I think. And then his father's from the Saskatchewan area. So they have ties to the Canadian Football League. I had no idea about that heading into the draft, especially with the kid being drafted first overall, which that kid wasn't ranked in the top 20 of the Canadian scouting.
That's because he was the last person added to the draft list. And this is another topic I wanted to tackle today. Is for those of you that don't know, that didn't read the description, don't care, you just downloaded blindly, this is just going to be a CFL draft recap where we let some things breathe and talk about kind of trends and what's happening and obviously some of the picks that we find interesting, but more so the big picture stuff. And the big picture thing that I find really interesting coming out of this, Kyle, is we are now seeing a trend year over year of, and I think it's fair to say more than ever before, the guy who shows up at the very last second from the NCAA going very highly rated. And the one that jumps out to me right away is Cam Judge when he came out of UCLA. Yep. And Unger obviously went early in the second round, I think 11th overall to Hamilton coming.
I remember when he got drafted in 2019, you were like, oh, where'd this kid come from?
Well, and the thing is every single damn year, there is somebody who they pop up either a day, 2 days, 3 days before to people on the media side, because the teams know, right? Like they've done their background work and they understand, okay, they get a heads up from CFL Football Ops. This person might be coming eligible in the next couple of days, but it's getting to the point now where I do, you know, the first mock draft is what it is. The second mock draft is before the NFL draft, and either the week leading up to the NFL draft or the couple of days after the NFL draft, that Sunday, Monday leading into the draft Tuesday for the CFL, I just keep refreshing my timeline, waiting for the story of the NCAA kid that has a Canadian mom who's going to show up in the draft. Like Darius Bledek was another one who went to the Saskatchewan Roughriders. I don't remember exactly where he went. I'll look that up real quick here. But and it's just, I don't know how to feel about it. I mean, I guess if it's the best talent available, that's great. But there is a little piece of me that looks at it and goes, man, this feels like everybody that's gone through an entire process and done all these virtual combine days and all these Zoom calls with all these teams and worked their way through U Sports. And then in comes Cam Judge, bang, and just lands. And it's like, well, you know, it's a cutthroat business, draft the best player available. So you're going to take the guy that you can, that's the best for you. But at the same time, I look at it and I'm just like, man, it seems like you're just cut in line based on your availability at the very last second. And I wonder, and we'll talk about this with Jake Burt and the Ticats, but like, how quick do you go from what you had as a plan at number one to Jake Burt because he just got here? Let's do our research on him and let's find it. And I don't think it's rushed because Drew Alamang and Schomburg do their background work, but this trend of the NCAA guy getting dropped in and we're all supposed to think, oh my goodness, he's amazing. He's so much better than everybody else in the draft because he went highly rated amongst all these players. I don't know. I pumped the brakes a little bit on that.
Yeah. I'm kind of with you when I would like the Canadian Football League to implement some sort of hard deadline, right? This is the date, and whether it's, you know, 2 months before the draft or 3 months before the draft, this is the date. And if you miss the deadline, that's fine, but you're not going to be drafted this year. You'll be drafted the following year, right? And I think maybe that will start pushing players to be like, oh, I should enter the Canadian Football League draft. Even if I do enter the NFL draft and there's a possibility I get drafted, this is my backup plan. And that's fine, right? We always talk about it where it's like the CFL, no player is going to play in the CFL over the NFL because obviously you can make way more money in the NFL, right? The CFL being a backup plan for kids, I have no problem with that. So I think we need to revisit the deadline system that we have in place because, like you said, the kid coming in last minute, getting drafted, and it seems, you know, in two of the last three drafts for the Hamilton Tiger Cats with David Unger and now Jake Burt, it's like this is becoming a trend that maybe we have to fix.
Right. And I don't want to sit here and act like the person who has been looking at the CFL draft for longer deserves to go higher just because they've been focused on the CFL for longer. Because if you're available and you're talented, teams are going to draft you. I got no problem with that. What I'm saying is I wonder whether or not teams become infatuated at the very last second so quickly because they become available. And there's always this rush to judgment on, well, he's from Regina, and if we don't take him, are the Riders going to take him at number two? And is he going to come back to haunt us? Are we going to play in a Grey Cup where it's Hamilton against Saskatchewan, and he's going to be catching a touchdown in the Grey Cup against us, and we're going to be kicking ourselves? Like,
yeah,
there's all these thoughts of what if. And then the thing that I always appreciate kind of hearing this in a scouting analogy is when you don't know which direction a train is going, don't just jump on a train. And I'm not saying that that's what happened here with Jake Burt, but I've done that. I've been at Union Station and I've jumped on the one and I've gone, wait a minute, this says, oh, damn it. You know what? It was the 52, not the 53. Now it's headed towards Oshawa. It's like, I'm trying to get back to Hamilton. I'm going the wrong direction here. I hop off at the next stop. And what happens? I get on the next train that's going the other direction. It's the same train I would have got on in the first place if I would have just waited at Union Station for the train that I knew was going that way, right? So sometimes you can complicate things for yourself unnecessarily, and sometimes I think there can be a rush to judgment. And obviously, nobody at the Ticats, nobody with the Riders when they took Cam Judge or when they took Darius Bledek, which, by the way, he was 11th overall when he was taken there. None of those people are going to say, yeah, we rushed to judgment and we just hope that it turned out. They're never going to admit that. So the idea of even presenting that to somebody and saying, was this a quick decision made? They say, no, we did our background due diligence. We knew months ahead. Yeah. Whether or not that's true, that's going to be the answer that you get. And again, that's just part of the draft, is that there's some fibs that are told in order to make sure everybody's on the same page. But like, even Randy Colling, 6th overall at Gannon, and I don't know if he was a last second drop in, but he was a bust and he was from a small school. And I don't remember him being mentioned in much of the draft list until we just found out, hey, this guy might be available. Oh, look, he went 6th overall to Calgary. And I wonder if that trend continues or if you can do a cutoff, because I know sometimes there's legitimate challenges to getting your eligibility completed going into the draft. And sometimes it stretches into that week that we're talking about. But it's pretty damn convenient that it always seems to get sorted out within the final week of the draft. And the person who gets it sorted out very rarely goes 45th overall.
Yeah, I think it's important to talk about the fact that CFL teams, when they make selections, every CFL team, they're not the same, right? And what I'm talking about is the circumstances in which they live in, right? The Hamilton Tiger Cats, they can, and I'm not saying Jake Burt is a risk, but they can take him because they have enough organizational depth that if Jake Burt turns out to be a bust, so be it, right? Maybe Jake Burt, you know, came late into the process and all of a sudden we're looking at this kid and we're like, okay, the upside is there, but what is he going to be in the CFL? And that question mark exists for every player in the draft. But, you know, the Ticats can take the upside guy, where at their best, what can this kid bring to the table? Can Jake Burt be a superstar in the CFL? To be honest, when he was selected and I saw his position of a tight end and then I saw his weight and his height, I was like, is he even going to be a tight end in the CFL? And I know you mentioned it as well on the broadcast, where it's like, he might be a receiver and that might be the case. So that's going to be interesting as well. So the Ticats, and we always talk about it of, oh, they have projects. Maybe Jake Burt is another one of these projects with even a higher upside and a quicker turnaround. That's going to be, you know, remarkable to see if the Ticats can get that out of Jake Burt. But like, for example, the Buffalo Bills in the NFL draft that just passed, their third round pick, Spencer Brown, 6'9" offensive tackle. This kid is jacked. He played basketball at Northern Illinois, like a physical specimen, but his upside is tremendous. In the last decade, the Buffalo Bills could never take a pick like that in their third round because, hey, we have to rely on this kid to take snaps. If Spencer Brown doesn't take a snap for the Buffalo Bills in 2021, they're going to be fine. He's not going to make a difference or a negative impact on the roster, but you have the ability to put the work in with these kids to develop them so they one day become roster players and they do have higher upsides than everybody else. And maybe the floor is a little bit lower because it's like, okay, if this kid, you know, turns out not to be an NFL player, he might just turn into a complete bust. But that will be interesting to see moving forward on how the Ticats adjust with, hey, is this kid ready now or is this kid going to be a project for the future?
Yeah, so he's 24 years old. Obviously, we know the background of him being in and around the Patriots for a while. He's 6'3", 245 pounds. By the way, the Patriots thing I did find kind of funny, because what have we seen with Matt Patricia and Charlie Weiss and Romeo Crennel and Josh McDaniels? And I'm trying to think, what's his name that was in Houston there? I've already forgotten his name. But O'Brien, that was the head coach and GM of the Houston Texans.
Oh, Bill O'Brien.
Yeah, Bill O'Brien. So
Bill O'Brien.
When I look at all of that, there's this golden shine that comes from being in and around the Patriots. I do wonder how much factored into that as well with the evaluation, where it's like, yeah, he's been around that. How much do you see on film that tells you that he is exponentially better than what you already have on the roster or other people that were available? Is maybe a question for a different day. But, and again, I'm not trying to jump all over the number one overall pick and poke holes in him and say this is going to be a bust. I don't have a damn clue. We don't know. What I am saying is I think that there's this sentiment amongst people, especially where we are in Hamilton, that we trust people blindly, and if they took him, he must be great. Well, 2018 Mark Chapman didn't even show up. So if we're living in reality, the reality here is that you just took a player who hasn't played CFL ball in a while, says that his game is the perfect fit for the CFL. Everybody's going to say that at that point. But for me, 6'3", 245, big body. Obviously, we know. I had heard some of the measurables that Dwayne Ford had mentioned on the TSN broadcast of the draft, where he said he's got a 4 or 5, whatever it is, 40-yard dash. He's pretty strong. He's got good quickness. When I watch him play, and again, watching against NCAA talent, there's a different level of speed there. But when I watch him play, the big body is the biggest asset. I'm not sure that there's going to be receiver speed. And so the thing that I threw out in the article that I wrote on CFL.ca, my 5 takeaways from the draft, was kind of this all-encompassing view. And this is part of the joy of having your own podcast, is that we can actually delve into this and discuss for a couple of minutes and not be restricted for time. I believe there's this full circle moment happening right now in the CFL, and that Jake Burt is the representation of that full circle moment. And I'm always interested when I hear Orlando Steinauer, for example, talk about the full circle idea of where the CFL has gone from and how it's evolved and changed around and been in different places. You remember the clip that we played of Dylan Wynn, Kyle, from the Ticats, when he was talking about defensive linemen. He's like, you know, they spread things out. CFL started to get wild and go 5 wide, 6 wide. And so the linebackers got kind of small. And so teams started running it with smaller running backs in between the tackles. And all of a sudden, as a defensive lineman, you had to be quicker because the O-line were getting more athletic. And so we got a little bit smaller and more athletic. And now what you're seeing is some more of these power backs like William Stanback come in, and he creates a challenge and a mismatch for you because he's so powerful. And so now you're running behind slightly larger, more physical offensive lines than in the last 5 years. And as a result, the defensive lines are needing to get bigger, and the linebackers, specifically the Mac and the Will, you're starting to get, and it's like constantly there's this tension in this push pull of positional groups and how they're responding to each other. And it almost reminds me of kind of one of those like blob charts that you see, where it's, you know, it's constantly just like shaping and moving. It's like an amoeba that's just like constantly wiggling around. If you were to say the focus or the height, the weight, the distribution, the body type, the skill set of different positional groups, I think that that is shaping and changing and moving around in a way that if you're just watching the game once a week, you're just watching your team, you probably don't realize. But if you're really looking closely at what's happening here, I think there's a change. I think there's something new and different about the, like Jake Burt, the stat I think the CFL Football Ops had was that he was the first tight end that was taken in the first round of the draft in X amount of years. It's been a minute. I'll pull this up for you here. He is the first player officially listed as a tight end to be taken in the first round since Scott Regimbald, who went 7th overall to Calgary 21 years ago in 2000. The last time a tight end went first overall was in 1989, when the Ottawa Rough Riders chose eventual CFL All-Star Gerald Wilcox. And so my thinking on this full circle moment that we're seeing with Jake Burt right now, Kyle, is that when the CFL spread things out, and they weren't necessarily the first to do this, because you could talk about Lance Allsworth down in the NFL, or you could talk about Kellen Winslow Sr. I mean, I've read stuff on the NFL where splitting tight ends out to wide receiver and nobody knew what the hell to do. They're like, we can't send a linebacker out there. We have to just play him with a DB. And then the corners get bigger because they have to deal with these bigger bodies that are tight ends split out wide. But when you started to see the CFL take bigger bodies and ones that would typically be used with their hand in the ground as a tight end in the 80s and the 90s, and they said, no, go stand out there. You're a slot back. And by the way, you can run to the line of scrimmage. Well, what happened was the NFL and the NCAA over time started to pick up some of this. Oh, bigger bodies in space. Oh, this is interesting. We don't have to have them looking jammed by a defensive end or being messed around by a Will linebacker at the line of scrimmage. We can get them a waggle. We can let them move a little bit. And so the NFL and the NCAA started to take these body types. And what those body types have evolved into is Gronk. It's Kelce. It's Kittle. It's the hybrid tight end receiver position that the NFL now is one of the most dangerous things. Like, you can make the argument that as dynamic as Tyreek Hill and all these big play receivers are, that the tight end that's the hybrid that can dominate over the middle of the field, we're not talking Jason Witten turning 5 yards down the field, turning around, catching a hook 5,000 times in his career. We're not talking anymore about Tony Gonzalez just running down the middle of the field, although he was part of that evolution. It's different now. It's guys that are running crossing routes and running away from defensive backs, running through defensive backs, because you can't tackle somebody that size that's running that fast. And when you have the NCAA and the NFL evolving to have all these players that are at this position, what happens? Well, it trickles down into the younger ages of football. And when you get that trickle down, kids are not necessarily interested anymore in, I'm a tight end, I'm a wide receiver. Now they're interested in, well, I can play wherever I want. If I'm big, I'm fast, I'm strong, and I have hands, I can be that running tight end that can be a slot back. And the CFL, because the waggle and the offensive systems, it's designed for that hybrid position. So this all brings me long-windedly back to my main point, which is in Jake Burt and what we've seen with Nikola Kalinic and Hamilton, with Bruno Labelle also getting a look by Saskatchewan in the middle rounds of this draft, I'm starting to think that the CFL, as part of the next evolution of offensive culture and systems and body types, I'm starting to think that most teams are going to start to go away from the French Canadian fullback who wears the 75 bars on his face mask because he just wants to run through your face. They're going to start using the Labelles and the Burts and the Spencer Moores and the Declan Crosses and the, like, those guys are different than the Calvin McCartys and the Rob Cotes to me. And that's again, part of the evolution. I don't want to write off those guys from 10 years ago plus, or 5 years ago plus even, with McCarty because he just retired. But I do think it's a different body type. I think it's a different skill set. And we're obviously seeing with the Ticats taking Burt first overall here, there's going to start being a prioritization, I believe, on this hybrid body type because it can be so dynamic in your offense.
Yeah, I think you bring up a lot of good points. And when you look at the Hamilton Tiger Cats and what they're trying to do on offense, does Jake Burt change that in a drastic way, right? Do they all of a sudden stop going five wide receivers and start going Jake Burt tight to the line of scrimmide? And then, you know, the other four wideouts, it'll be interesting. And you brought up a point, and we talked about it last week about, you know, the Ticats were able to get over the Mark Chapman saga very quickly because they had a lot of organizational depth. And then we went off air and I was thinking to myself, I don't know if that's true. And what I mean by that is, go look at the 2019 season, right? What happened for the Ticats? Sean Thomas Erlington goes down with injury. Malik Irons filled into that spot admirably, but there was something missing for the Ticats, right? So what did they do? They went out and they drafted, or not drafted, they signed Terrell Sutton to be their running back. And then they went back to American running back, you know, taking the majority of the carries, and especially in the Grey Cup. And what did they have to do to change things? They had to put Mike Jones in as the starting wide receiver. And Ticats fans, we were on air on the radio. I was on the post game show. There was a lot of Ticats fans that were frustrated with Mike Jones because they thought they should get more out of that position than they were. Fast forward to the Grey Cup. What happens? Mike Jones's drop was not the reason why the Ticats lost that Grey Cup, but it went a long way into making sure the Ticats had no hell of a chance to come back. Right. That was a massive drop. Yeah. That was points taken off the board for the Ticats.
And I'm convinced. I'm convinced it was the reason that it was the last play of his Ticats career as well. The last memorable play.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I don't want to put too much of the blame on Mike Jones, but, you know, that was a big play in the Grey Cup that's, you know, swung things a lot in the favor of the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. And I was thinking, what would have Mark Chapman looked like in his second year as a wide receiver instead of Mike Jones in that position, or the Ticats having some sort of Canadian receiver depth? And they didn't. And maybe the draft of Jake Burt goes a long way into repairing that. We don't know what David Unger is going to be because, again, he played 1 year, wasn't a big part of the offense. But when he was on the field, there were still some things he had to learn. The physical makeup of David Unger, I'm like, okay, this guy, if he can get it together and understand the CFL game, because remember, he didn't play in Canada collegiately. If he can understand the CFL game, he can be a big difference maker.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
we're still a long way from that. So I think, you know, Jake Burt coming into the picture, and now Mike Jones obviously not being in Hamilton, it's going to be very telling on what the Ticats do in the 2021 season. That's going to dictate what they do moving forward, especially from that Canadian receiver position. If Sean Thomas Erlington can stay healthy and Malik Irons can, you know, better grasp the CFL game and be a difference maker when it comes to being a backup running back, being the spell to Sean Thomas Erlington, then the Ticats can go five Americans at receiver, yeah, right? Especially if you're going to have four Canadians on the offensive line. And, you know, I mentioned on the draft show, we still don't know what's going to go on with that Mike Filer spot at center for the Ticats. Is it a Canadian that fills in, or is it an American that, you know, steps in out of nowhere to take that spot? We don't know.
Did you know there's a Nikola Kalinic, who's a professional footballer, who's a Croatian, who plays as a striker for the Italian club Hellas Verona?
Yeah.
I did not know that.
He's been, that guy is not young. I want to say he's like almost in his 30s.
Yeah, he's born in 1988 is what I'm seeing here. So I was looking up Nikola Kalinic's size for the next point I wanted to make here, and I saw that. I was like, huh, I didn't know that. But
I don't want to stereotype, but anytime there's a Serbian named Nikola or a Russian guy named Igor or Andre or Victor, yeah, I'm just like, oh, of course.
The combination, I think, is what struck me. But so here's the thing, and I don't want to paint the Ticats into a corner here by saying, was he the replacement for Mark Chapman? Because they're different body types, right? Like, I got to look up what Mark Chapman was, but I remember watching him in person, I think, in Winnipeg at that CFL week in that combine. And, there's a Mark David Chapman, who's an American security guard who murdered John Lennon. How about that? But Google on fire today with all of these. But yeah, for me, when I think about the player that they just got, right, in Jake Burt, he's 6'3", 245. Well, Nikola Kalinic is an inch and a half taller, and he weighs at least 10 more pounds. So they're not the same player. You might say, well, that's close enough. Yes, they're similar, but they're not the same player. And David Unger, to your point, Kyle, about him being physically, he's powerful, he's dynamic, but he's 5'10", 170 is what I have him listed at last time that we checked in. So you're talking about somebody who is 5 inches shorter and is 70 pounds lighter than what they just got in Jake Burt. 70 pounds. That's a full-size child that we're talking about.
Yeah.
The difference
not
between.
Not the same.
No. So they're different guys in that spot. And Mark Chapman, the last height weight that I have him at is 6'180". So I don't want to ask this question without adding the context that they're different positions, they're different speeds, they're different playing experiences, they come from different backgrounds, because Chapman is more of an Ungerer, and maybe Ungerer was the guy that, you know, hopefully they're going to use him in the Chapman role moving forward. Maybe they're looking at using Burt as an inside slot back, but I think it's fair to ask the question, was taking Jake Burt first overall in the 2021 CFL draft the makeup call for what happened with Mark Chapman?
Ooh, that is an interesting take. And on the Unger front, I think it's important for us to point out that the Ticats kind of already have that body type for David Unger, right? And what I meant of his body type and his physical traits is he's the quick slot guy, right? He's the quick underneath guy that's able to get open. And if he does, can make something happen after the catch. The Ticats already have those guys on the American front. They have Brandon Banks. They have Braylon Addison, right? And now you have even a Devere Posey, a little bit less so. I think he's a little bit more physically imposing than
he's pretty
Braylon
skinny.
Addison or Brandon Banks.
He's pretty skinny, though. Like, I'm thinking even if the Ticats wanted to go with Jalen Marshall at wide side wide receiver because they wanted to use Burt as an inside slot back. Because I think Marshall is the one that nobody's talking about who's going to end. He's not going to have a huge year. But I think between him and Posey, that's your 3-4. And obviously Banks and Addison are your 1-2. And now the Ticats are looking at, okay, what do we do with that fifth spot? And I genuinely believe
Jalen Acklin.
Yeah. So Jalen Acklin's another one there. So, but I genuinely believe, like, if you take off Jalen Marshall from the field, you go Acklin alongside Addison into the boundary and over to the field, you're going to go, help me out here. Posey maybe is a wide side guy and Banks is as a field side slot. Maybe you're going Banks alongside Jalen Marshall or whoever in the inside slot back is what I'm trying to get to here. I think that becomes the flex position between Kalinic and Burt, if I had to guess right now. And it's like, they don't have that body type that is Kalinic, but able to run crisp routes. And that's the whole idea here, I think, of Burt is, if they would have had, and this is what is kind of the interesting thought experiment, if they would have had Mark Chapman, would they have just taken Burt? I think that helps educate the answer on whether or not Burt was the makeup call for Chapman. Because if Chapman's in the roster right now and he's established and he was good in the 2019 season where they exploded offensively with Masoli and Evans throwing it all over the place, do they still take Jake Burt? And I think the answer to that for me is a clear no. I think at that point they're investing at a different position because you're saying, well, we've already got Unger alongside Chapman. But again, do they end up taking Unger or Chapman if they have the other one in house? Probably, but I don't know the answer for sure to that question. So for me, it was the makeup call on the Chapman decision. Not that it was an error by the Ticats necessarily, because it seems like Chapman kind of did them dirty and they were very gracious about it. But the fact that he wasn't there and the fact that they had the opportunity to go and get somebody who was a dynamic skill set that was more of a route runner and a pass catcher than Kalinic, because Kalinic is, he's a lot of things. He's not going to blow you away. Like, he's physical. He's mean at the line of scrimmage. He can get out and slip to the flats, but there were times where he's running routes and he left a little bit to be desired. Burt adds more of the receiver skill set than Kalinic does as a true tight end fullback, but he also adds more of the tight end skill set, the big body in the box blocking linebackers, than Unger does. So he was a perfect fit that was in between these two extremes of pure receiver, 5'10", 170, and pure tight end, 6'5", 255. 6'3", 245, can run, has some NCAA experience. It makes a lot of sense, but I don't think he gets taken if Chapman was in that spot, in that roster, because even though Chapman is not the same style or size as Burt, I just don't think they would need a Burt because they'd be getting enough production. They would have just gone a different direction and been like, hey, we can throw the ball all over the place because Chapman's that good.
I think you're right on that front. And, you know, before I joined you guys on the draft show, I, you know, kind of filled out a, you know, makeshift depth chart for the Ticats. And I'm just like, okay, if you go four Canadians on the offensive line, again, we don't know what's going to happen at center, but you got Van Zyl, Sirocco, Revenberg, and then that Canadian center. Sean Thomas Erlington in the backfield. That's five Canadian starters on offense. You don't, and then you have on the defensive side, you got Ted Laurent and Tunde Adeleke or Mike Daly on whoever starts at, you know, safety. I look at it and say, do the Ticats go five American wideouts? And if they do, or if they don't, where does Jake Burt fit in? You can't put him on the field side out wide, can you? A 6'3 guy whose route running ability might not be fantastic. And can he beat guys down the rail if he doesn't have breakaway speed? I don't know.
You could, like, but
it'll
I
be
don't
interesting
think
it, to find out.
I think you could, but you're not going to maximize his value there. And you don't take a number one overall pick to stand on the wide side and hope to have 10 catches a year. You take if you're going to spend on a receiver at number one overall, then, and again, that's me labeling him as a receiver, right? Because I'm thinking of him as a receiver because I understand he's labeled as a tight end and he's the first since 1989 to go first overall with Gerald Wilcox and all the rest. But to me, he's a receiver for the Ticats. Will he put his hand down on the ground on second and short, third and short? Sure. But watch how many times they go play action in the backfield and slip him to the flats on those plays and treat him like a receiver. Like, that's the whole point, is you can line a tight end up as a wide receiver. Like, if they put Kalinic out wide, is he now a wide receiver? I mean, by position, but he's a tight end playing wide receiver. To me, when you bring Burt in, despite his size at 6'3", 245, if you put him as a receiver and a slot back, he's a big body slot back that can move and run and block. If you put him as a tight end, he's a slightly undersized tight end, not by much, but he's slightly, and not even in relation to Kalinic, because Kalinic is a monster, but in relation to most of the league, he's a slightly undersized tight end, but he's a receiver playing tight end at that position, right? At that time. So yeah, I'm with you. Like, he is that unique in between that I think he would be caught out playing anywhere other than slot back, and he would be wasted playing that wide side receiver.
But again, you know, I talked about on the David Unger front, you kind of already have those slot guys, you know, kind of in the roster and they're kind of penciled in already, right? You have Brandon Banks, Braylon Addison. And I know Banks can play, you know, a field wide side position, or he can go boundary. You can put him all over the field. We all understand that. I think Brandon Banks is better suited in the slot position, especially when he has a guy like Braylon Addison inside of him. And I'm looking at this and thinking, okay, what do the Ticats do and how does Burt fit into this? If he's on the field, does Banks go out wide? Do you kick Addison over to be that second guy to the field? Like, I have no idea on what the Ticats are going to try to do. It'll be very telling in training camp whenever that comes about, where it's like, huh, Jake Burt. Oh, okay, he's there. Okay, we're going to be very used to seeing him in that position on the field.
Yeah, all 5 days of training camp to figure out where to use him before we start a regular season, right? Because that feels like that's what it's going to be. And again, I understand that they're saying July 5th, July 12th, we'll get into it on August 5th and the regular season. And I have a feeling that this is like one preseason game with 10 days of on-field training camp and bang, we're running. And you're going to see week one, he might be in the complete wrong position. Honestly, he might be in the wrong spot based on what he's able to do. But they're going to need time to figure out because it's such an unusual year. And I'm not saying that Condell doesn't know where he wants to put him right now. I'm saying that might be an evolution. They might figure out, because I think there's been various points with the Ticats where, I mean, take Speedy, for example. And obviously this was because Kent didn't believe that Speedy could be a full-time receiver. Mm-hmm. But that took a hell of a long time for them to figure out, not only can he play receiver, he can play the boundary wide receiver position, which is typically designed for your Darvin Adams and your Darrell Walkers and like the big, long, lanky jump ball type guys. And June Jones was like, screw that. This guy's a receiver and he can play this position despite the size that he's at. Now, June's system obviously worked with guys that size a little bit better, but the fact remains the same that he could play that position. And he showed with Condell after June left, he could still play that position. So yeah, the question of where he gets his first opportunities in training camp, it might be the most interesting question going into training camp at large, but
Who's going to play quarterback for the Ticats?
Well, yeah, you're right. That's the biggest question, I think.
We've overlooked like the biggest storyline, not just in Hamilton, but maybe in the Canadian Football League, where it's like, who's going to start at quarterback for the Ticats? Dane Evans or Jeremiah Masoli? We have no clue.
And we're all talking about where the ball is going to end up, and we're not even talking about where it's going to start, which is the center. Like, this is the whole thing is that all three levels of the offensive procedure right now for the Ticats, from throwing it to the Canadian dudes, to who's going to be throwing it to them, to who's going to be snapping it to the dude who's going to be throwing it to them, who's going to be throwing it to the Canadian receivers.
Yeah.
Here we are 3 months out from August 5th, essentially, and we don't have a damn clue. That's exciting, but that's also super weird because the Ticats have had so much stability at center, Mike Filer, quarterback, either Kolaros or Masoli, receiver, Fantuz. Like that for a long time, it was like Fantuz, Tasker, Masoli, Kolaros, Filer, bang, that's your roster. And now we're going into a season where it's like Delvin Bro, not there. Sam linebacker, up in flux. Middle linebacker, might be a depth guy, Chris Fry, otherwise. Center, not really sure. The quarterback position will sort itself out based on performance, certainly, and hopefully not based on injuries. And then, the offensive skill position guys, I think this year I am going to track who is on the field for the receivers for the Ticats and the running backs and all of that, because I want to see snap counts at the end of games. And I want to see which package of players are being used together the most and where they're lining up. I would love to do that for every team, in full disclosure. Yeah. I don't have the time because I have a fiance and a 7-month-old and 2 dogs, and I'd like to have a life. But I think for the Ticats specifically this year, I want to do that, and we can update that on this show when we get the opportunity. But let's take a quick break for you here. That was a fun little opening set. A lot of Ticats talk. I'm sorry if you're not a Ticats fan, but I just feel like number one overall pick, weird position got taken. Where's he going to slot? Is all interesting stuff. When we come back on the other side for you here, we are going to give you a little bit more broader image across the CFL draft. We'll talk about some of our favorite picks as well before we get into the Friday house party on Marsh and Mello right here on CFP. Marshall Ferguson here from my friends at Four Stagioni. Want to get your golf game in shape before the season begins? You can book their TrackMan golf simulators now. These things are world-class. They've got a new daily drink deal and spring-summer menu coming soon, just in time for the patio. That's right, patio season, just around the corner. ForStagioni.ca, and you can follow on Instagram at four, that's F-O-R-E, dot Stagioni, S-T-A-G-I-O-N-E. Open for takeout daily. give them a call at 905-381-9850.
For those tough wake-ups.
John Gott drank a beer and then crushed it off the side of his helmet. This was a damn Canada heritage moment.
It's Marsh and Mellow.
I've been talking about it for probably 5 years now, and I finally pulled the trigger. Saw that beer, chugged it, and crushed it over my head, and that was about it.
Welcome back. It is Marsh and Mellow right here on Canadian Football Perspective. I do want to give a quick shout-out to a new friend of the podcast here. Of course, we've got Off the Tee with Carlo Macaluso. I hope that he's doing well and getting everybody all ready for their golf games coming up this summer. Offthetee.ca is where you go for that. We got Sada City Beer that's partnered up with us here, Fox 40 International, of course. And one more that I want to throw into the fray for those of you who weren't with us in the first couple of minutes of the draft show back on Tuesday live on Twitch. Is that we have got a new partnership with Area 51 Sports. And Area 51 Sports, if you're not familiar, they're an apparel company, newest player in the Canadian team sports uniform and equipment industry, locally and minority owned. Area 51 Sports' goal is to provide high quality uniforms, apparel, and equipment at affordable prices. And they offer uniforms and equipment for all sports at remarkable prices. You can check them out. They're on Instagram at Area 51. That's the number 51 at Area 51 Sport. Or reach out to them via email at area51sportsapparel@gmail.com. If you're starting to think about return to play, we got the whistle deal there with Fox 40, where you put in CFP15 and you get some money saved in your pocket on all the whistle technology and then the equipment stuff as well. Area 51 will hook you up. They sent us some beautiful CFP hoodies and a couple of hats as well, which, Kyle, I'm excited to drop that off at your place and make sure that you're all swagged out for the next time we get an opportunity to do the podcast. So black hoodie season, not really right now because it's starting to warm up and be pretty nice. But we'll get you one of those anyways, because Marlene's been making fun of me because I've just been wearing it around the house while I've been hanging out and doing draft coverage and walking the dogs. And she's like, are you going to wear any other hoodies? I'm like, it's really comfortable. I'm sorry. It's not even because it has the CFP logo on. It's just really comfy. But
I'm a big fan of like running my house cold. So like nice. The air conditioner, just keeping it very cold and then just rocking the hoodie indoors. Like, why not?
Yeah, that's true. Let's get into some of the other notes from across the CFL draft here. The first one that jumped out to me was the Calgary Dinos. I knew coming into the draft that the Calgary Dinos offensive line was going to be something that would help shape the rest of the draft board, because Carter Como, alongside Tyler Packer, alongside Peter Nicastro, who goes really high to the Argonauts in the first round, alongside Logan Bandy, who fell all the way to, I think, 37th or 38th, if I'm not mistaken. Like, those guys were going to have some success. But then you factor in a couple of linebacker selections in Grant McDonald and Charlie Moore. And then you have Dean Leonard, who obviously left Calgary to go down to Ole Miss and was a defensive back there. You start to realize just how freaky what Calgary's doing is. And obviously that 2019 group that just got drafted right now, their last year, like their fourth year, would have been 2020. You got to keep this in context. Like, again, I love looking at the long history of U Sports and the CFL, the relationships between these franchises and these universities, because Calgary's long been one of the very best schools at producing top end talent. I'm not breaking any news there. I looked since the modern era started in 1985 of the CFL draft, Calgary leads the way with 114 draft selections in the CFL draft. Now, keeping in mind, every year there's 60 some odd draft selections in the CFL draft, give or take, depending on how many rounds we have and what year it is. But there's only about 60 some odd chances for people to get drafted each year. They've got 114 over the last almost 35 years, let's say. And again, give or take, but I mean, that's pretty stunning to see. And Laval would be there, obviously, if their program hadn't started up in the mid-2000s. But Calgary's run of high-end talent production is wild, because they have 20 straight years tied with Laval, 20 straight years that Calgary has had a player drafted by a CFL franchise. 20 years of having your program mentioned among the best, whether it be a late-round draft pick, an early draft, it doesn't matter. If you're drafted, your program's doing something right. And they have 20 straight years. It's hard to keep those streaks going, to not have a single year over two decades where you just didn't have an individual talent that was worthy of getting drafted. That's really tough to do. Now, the funny thing about this is that Western had a streak going of 17 years. And with the final pick of the entire draft, 54th overall, the Ticats took Miles Manalo, linebacker from the Western Mustangs. I'm not saying that Miles didn't deserve to be drafted. I don't want somebody from the Ticats reaching out to us and saying, how dare you say that he didn't deserve it or he shouldn't have been or whatever. What I'm saying here, though, is if you are the Ticats and you have a relationship with Greg Marshall from the Western Mustangs and you very much like going down and having the good seats, or Craig Butler is on your coaching staff and you see that no Western Mustangs have been drafted, maybe Craig Butler was aware of this streak, maybe he wasn't, but I laugh at the idea of, hey, guys, a bit of a throwaway pick here at the end. We don't typically get a ton of value at the end of the sixth round, especially when it's six of six in the CFL draft. Anybody have any ideas? And you go, well, if you're a Western Mustang guy and you have any connections and you're in that room, maybe you're saying, well, Manalo's still on the board. I mean, and it happened to continue the streak. I'm not saying that was the purpose of it, but it's amazing because you go 20 years straight for Laval and Calgary, now 18 years straight for the Western Mustangs. And the next school that's on that list, I believe, is at 9 years, if I'm not mistaken.
Way behind.
Yeah. And so there's a huge gap there between the top programs in the country. I'll pull up this list real quick. It was in an article on CFL.ca, and I tweeted it out from CFP as well. But UBC has 10 straight years. Guelph has 9. Mac has 9. Montreal has 9. Alberta has 7. Carleton 5. Laurier 5. York 4. Manitoba 3, Saskatchewan 3. I always want to call them Saskatoon. I hate that. Regina is at 2, and then Mount Allison and St. Mary's active streak of 1. Everybody else that I did not mention there, all the other schools, U Sports, have a streak active of 0 coming out of this year's draft. And yet you're sitting there with Western at 18, Calgary Laval at 20, UBC at 10, and then Guelph, Mac, Montreal at 9. That's the only schools that are in the top 5 of having active streaks. So Calgary's dominance and Western staying in the conversation, to me, that was pretty funny to see the way that shook out on a weird draft year.
Yeah. And you're always fighting with yourself on when you do your mock drafts, not just, you know, drawing up the local university kid going to that CFL team. And it's like, that's the way it works out, especially now with Danny Machocha in Montreal.
Oh my God. Like
his entire draft was a French Canadian.
That Lestage pick at 10th overall was so predictable because it wasn't necessarily the right fit for them to get value right now, because he's going to the Seahawks and he'll probably make the roster. And I was like, he doesn't give a damn. He's just going to take the guy that he knows from the University of Montreal. And it's back-to-back years now where in the second round, Danny Machocha has just said, I'm just going to take the best Carabin. And it makes sense because he knows him better than anybody. He recruited him, I'm pretty sure, those guys. But Marc-Antoine Ducroix goes in the second round last year, probably going to be the starting free safety moving forward, which I can't wait to watch that guy play in the CFL. And then Lestage there as well. So.
Yeah. And I think we've reached the point, especially after the Ticats selected first overall, that was supposed to be the Montreal Alouettes draft pick, that the Johnny Manziel story in the CFL has officially ended, because nothing from that trade exists anymore.
Well, it's funny you say that, because something does exist, and I actually pulled it out of my drawer yesterday, because it's officially a cutoff season in the Marshall Ferguson Center for Performance and General Wellbeing, also known as my gym, where I just have some dumbbells. And so I pulled out the cutoff, and I pulled out the cutoff from my, you know, storage of summer stuff. I have this thing where I have like a bucket in the basement of summer clothing that I put in a bucket during the winter. Yeah. And then I swap it out and I put the winter stuff in the bucket during the summer months. So I did the swap officially this week, which is when, you know, summer is actually on its way, here in Ontario. But when I pulled out the cutoff, I have a couple of McMaster cutoffs that were basically like workout shirts that I chopped the sleeves off. I've got one from Watkins Glen when I went to a NASCAR race there, because if you're going to NASCAR, you know, you got to have a lime green NASCAR cutoff that you're wearing the entire weekend and getting bad tan lines. I also have one that's like a wolf shirt. I don't know where, I think I might've got it in Jasper when I was there a couple of years ago, that it just is like a full wolf, like one of those 3D all over print muscle shirts that I chopped the sleeves off. And then I found the Ticats number 2 Johnny Manziel cutoff t-shirt that I had in my basement. And I said, do I need to pull this out? I'm like, yeah, this is a great conversation starter for when I am walking the dogs and people see me walking around in the summer in a number 2 Manziel jersey t-shirt. And immediately people will come up and ask you about, oh yeah, that, where'd you find that? And know what the funny story is on that? I was getting ready to call a Ticats game, and my fiance, then girlfriend Marlene, called me And she said, I'm at Giant Tiger. They have Manziel t-shirts here for $5. Like, wow. it was after he'd been traded, and whoever had ordered all of that Johnny Manziel number 2 Ticats t-shirt stock either had a deal with Giant Tiger, or they had just decided, let's send it all to Giant Tiger and they can sell it for cheap. And I turned to Mike Morielli and I said, do you want a Manziel tee? He goes, oh my God, yeah, I'll wear that around the pool in Vegas. So if you ever see a Manziel Ticats cutoff around a pool in Vegas, it's Mike Morielli.
Oh man, that is that's gold. It's crazy that, you know, that guy came into the CFL with so much hype, and now he's just a complete afterthought that only exists in old t-shirts. It's like, oh yeah, remember when he came into the CFL, just like inconsequential, like effect on the Canadian Football League. And it was like, we talk about, you know, the draft and the draft process, and it's like, okay, who's going to be a bust and who's not going to be a bust? And Johnny Manziel, it seemed out of the question that he could eventually just be a bust. And Montreal finally ended paying for that with that first overall pick the other day. So yeah. Just remarkable to see how quickly things change in the sport of football.
For somebody who has spent so much time winning in their life, financially, success, actually on-field winning, I know that, you know, I think this now, Kyle, and I was intrigued when he came in. I gave it a shot. I lived the Johnny Manziel experience. I watched the social media. I saw how he interacted with his teammates, but I also saw him show up late to practices. I had heard from June Jones that he'd missed a couple of meetings. I watched the way that he flippantly would warm up without really warming up, because why would he warm up? Because he wasn't going to play. What a loser. That guy is such, and I say this passionately now, in hindsight, and people might say, oh, he's got like the bipolar stuff going on, and that's all fair and well. But regardless of the things that are happening around him, sometimes I see a tweet from him blow up now just because he has this massive following still of people who either don't care that he's a massive loser or celebrate that he's a massive loser. And I can't believe that anybody would give a damn who Johnny Manziel is anymore. Like, he needs to go into obscurity and just, I'm not even gonna say go sort out your life or go for, I don't even give a damn anymore. Like, you, man. I could not care less after seeing in person the type of dude that he was. And it was a fun experiment because it was a bit of a zoo, but I just look back at it now and I think, what a loser. That's my takeaway from everything.
Yeah. And realize when he was in training camp with the Ticats and early on in the CFL season, Dane Evans was an unknown. Yeah. We had no idea. He had a big arm. We didn't know if he could put it all together. And then he did, when he finally got a shot after Jeremiah goes down. But even before that, you know, June Jones always was talking about Dane Evans and the fact that he never left the building. Tim Hortons Field, he practically lived there, watching tape, working out, things like that. And I remember at training camp multiple times where, you know, and we did our morning show there. So we were there at 5:30 a.m. Then we would stay for practice, do press conference things, and then take off, right? And whatever time that was, 1-2 o'clock in the afternoon. And I'm getting in my car, and I don't know if it was a reserved parking spot. Johnny's car was always where I used to park, and Johnny was getting in his car too. And I'm just like, wait, Dane Evans like never goes home. All these guys aren't going home. They're staying here to put in the work. And Johnny Manziel, right after practice, is taking off. That can't be a good look.
Here's my question. Where is he going?
Yeah.
Like, there was nowhere to go. Like, he didn't know anybody. Unless it was people in Toronto that he was going to visit with them. Anyways, I don't want to get bogged down in Manziel, because I'm sure we could tell those stories forever. But sometimes I see that and I think about the long stretch of CFL memory, and I'm like, oof, man, that Manziel thing, not great.
Yeah.
Were there any other selections, Kyle, just here before we jump into the Friday house party? Was there anything else that jumped out to you from the draft that you thought was interesting? Because the Ticats, obviously, we've talked a lot about them, but they do end up going defense with their next three selections. It's Mohamed Diallo out of Central Michigan, Dean Leonard as a future at Ole Miss by way of Calgary. And then, of course, they go Nick Cross, coming off an ACL, 9th overall, Nick Cross. And I thought that he might have been more of a free safety prospect, but Tunde Adeleke is there. And last time I checked, he's not going anywhere real fast. Not that it's bad to ever have depth, but Eamon Ogbong-Mamiga going all the way up to 8th. His teammate Chuba Hubbard not going until 43rd overall at Oklahoma State to Calgary. I knew he was going to go to Calgary. I felt he was going to go to Calgary. He ends up in Calgary. David Cote, the kicker from Laval, goes to Montreal at 45. I thought that was interesting. There's lots of stuff here, obviously, for me, studying these guys, that every pick is a little interesting to me, with the exception of a few. But what jumped out to you that you thought you saw it and you had heard or read something about that person, you went, wow, that's an interesting fit?
The only thing I'll say is it's interesting because I looked at this draft board as a complete unknown. I had very small recollections of, like, okay, I remember that guy playing, like, yeah, the Manalo, the guy that Ticats drafted as Mr. Irrelevant in the CFL draft. I remember watching, you know, games at, you know, at McMaster, and I'm like, oh, this kid is definitely good. So I look at what the Toronto Argonauts did. It's funny because 3 weeks ago or 2 weeks ago on the show, I mentioned, you know, it's important for CFL teams to make sure they have depth on both lines, offensive line and defensive line, from a Canadian perspective, and obviously throw in Americans in there as well, to make sure you have top end talent, because if those guys go down or those guys need a breather during a game, other guys can step in and you can be confident in what they do. The Toronto Argonauts, Peter Nicastro, the offensive lineman taken, then they went Doxeter, the other offensive lineman.
Yeah.
And then in the third round, they went D-line. I think the kid was out of Quebec, and it's like, oh, I see what the Argos are trying to do. They're trying to shore up, you know, both lines. And I think it's important, especially from a Canadian perspective, to have those guys in-house, because I'm not saying all great Canadians that play in the CFL, but there are a ton of great Canadians that play in the CFL that play on the offensive line. Just in Hamilton, look, right? You have Canadian, not just depth at, you know, the Canadian spot, but you also have star players like Brandon Revenberg is a star in the CFL. And it's funny, people were mentioning to me, where do you think, who do you think is going to play center for the Ticats? And I'm like, I have no idea. And then they responded, you think Brandon Revenberg would move to center? I'm just like, huh? Why would you limit Brandon Revenberg and what he can do? That guy is, like, just killing defensive lines in that left guard position. I would not move Brandon Revenberg at all.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. He said to us on radio too in Hamilton here that he doesn't really envision himself deciding to move. Like, he likes playing where he's at, and he's not really that open to moving around, which I'm like, okay, if he doesn't want to move, then let's not move him. We don't need to in that spot.
Yeah. You guys are crushing it.
But yeah, the Argos doing what they did, you know, getting, you know, three guys in a row. And then I think they went linebacker in round four. That was interesting. And then, you know, just looking at, you know, the CFL, and I mentioned it on the draft show because you guys had mentioned offensive linemen and how, you know, in the second part of the draft, there was still a ton of talent available. There was kind of a makeup for that, where teams were like, okay, let's go offensive line here. Just, you know, to my previous points, it's important to have, you know, depth at those positions because you can fill in with Americans. And it was, you know, I was trying to think to myself as well, and I have, you know, no experience of this, what position is the hardest to learn if you're brought in midseason? Because we know this, like, a bunch of free agents are always brought in during the year, American free agents, and asked to fill in at certain spots. And I'm just like, offensive line has to be, like, one of the spots where it's, it's an important position. It takes a long time to learn.
Yeah, I wonder. I think they're all so different in their own way, but I would think defensive backfield too, just Canadian coverages, having an extra guy, so many receivers running around, wider field. I think that would play on me a little bit as well.
Sure. Yeah, your zone coverage all of a sudden.
All right, when we come back on the other side, we're going to do the Friday house party for you, and then we are going to wrap up the show and say farewell on a Friday. A fun little CFL draft recap here for you on CFP. And don't forget, of course, our friends at sawdustcitybeer.com. Check them out and use the promo code CFP to get free shipping on orders over $100. We'll enjoy some Sawdust City at the Friday house party right after this. Area 51 Sports Apparel is the newest player in the Canadian team sports uniform and equipment industry. Marshall Ferguson here for Canadian Football Perspective. They hooked us up with some great looking hoodies, polos, and hats. They are locally and minority owned. Area 51 Sports, their goal is to provide high quality uniforms, apparel, and equipment at affordable prices. Area 51 Sports offers uniforms and equipment for all sports at remarkable prices. You can check them out on Instagram at Area 51. That's the numbers 51 at Area 51 Sport, or reach out to them via email at Area51SportsApparel@gmail.com.
Welcome to the party. Let's get weird.
All right. It is a Friday staple for us here on Marsh and Mello, and we wanted to bring it to you, even though this week is really just about doing a CFL draft recap. We always enjoy being able to go through the best sound of the week for you. Again, I don't have a bunch this week, but I do have some funny stuff that scrolled across the timeline, some serious stuff as well. But this is the first one I want to bring to you. This went viral for just a day or two ago. It is a dad holding a press conference after a tough day with the kids, which I related to a lot of this. I'm already in that position where I'm starting to fall into the trap of enjoying dad content on social media.
You sum up the day.
Yeah, honestly, just felt like we got behind early. After the milk spill and the marker on the wall, we just felt like we were playing catch up the rest of the day.
Right before you went to the store, you called a timeout. Was there an attitude change after that?
Yeah, it felt like we were losing our heads there for a minute, so we wanted to just calm things down and get back to the basics.
Did you ever find your keys?
No. No idea where they are.
You gave them a snack half hour before dinner. Was that planned?
No. I lost track of time. Wasn't thinking. And so, you know, three bites of dinner. That's on me.
It didn't look like you had many answers to the double teams.
Is it a question?
So that is the dad press conference there. You gave him a bite before dinner, and that's on three bites of dinner. That's on me, you know. And also, he sounds kind of like Aaron Rodgers with a lot of these, right? Like the one word answers and the deep exhales. It's like
you sum up the day.
Yeah, honestly, just felt like we got behind early after the milk spill and the marker on the wall. We just felt like we were playing catch up the rest.
That's really good though. So.
What the most horrifying part of that clip is it sounds so much like a football coach in like week four of the season. It's like, yeah, you know, we just lost our heads there. And it's like, it's the same tone.
Yeah. This one I thought was interesting too. The man that I fell in love with during the Masters, deeply, lustily in love with Will Zalatoris. I fell in love with him during the Masters, as many people did their first exposure to him if you're a casual golf fan like I am. And I saw this week that he was on the Foreplay pod, and he was talking about the use of analytics, sports analytics. He said it's not math, it's not numbers, it is quantified strategy. Listen to his opinion here on how this stuff should be used.
You know, so like, here's the basic premise that it's really helped me with is tour average from 100 yards in the fairway is 2.8. So you drop a ball in the middle of the fairway, a tour average player, it's going to take you 2.8 shots to hold it from there. So if you're to hit a shot onto a green where you're going to average 1.8, that's 16 feet. So roughly 5%. So if you think about it, if you've got a pin that's tucked 3 or 4 off of an edge, you should be aiming a yard or two away from that edge, more towards the middle of the green. And the reality is, like, all the really great players and all timers, they did it anyways. They might not know the statistics, but they just know, hey, I've got a 7-iron, this pin's 4 off the left, I should aim, you know, a couple paces to the right of this flag. What he's done is he's quantified strategy.
So there you go. That is Will Zalatoris talking about how I never really thought of golf as an analytics sport. But when you hear him talking like that, I'm like, hell yeah, I'm in.
Yeah. And I think we all know this, right? Playing the game of golf. Golf in large part is mental more than it is physical. And how confident are you when you strike the golf ball? These professionals are all confident, right? So how do you up that confidence? Well, use analytics, right? If you're more confident in what you're doing on the course, that's only going to help you and breed more confidence in yourself, because you know what you're trying to do and there's a purpose of doing so that is supported by numbers. And Zalatoris is like a perfect example of that. They talked about that on the broadcast. Nance kept mentioning it. The use of analytics, and Faldo as well. The use of analytics for Will Zalatoris and how he just kind of like bursted onto the scene. It's interesting that he's like best friends with Tony Romo too.
Yeah. That's a pretty good one, which by the way, I just found out yesterday that Kevin from The Office, Brian Baumgartner, who is, hey, it's me, Kevin. He is extremely good friends with Aaron Rodgers. Big Packers guy. And Aaron reached out to him because he loved The Office and they've been friends. They play golf together all the time now. So, I did not know that, but the podcast I was listening to, they asked him, hey, any chance you can give us some information there on Rodgers, Brian? And he's like, yeah, no, that's not a thing.
Yeah, they keep asking Pat McAfee about that too, where it's like, do you have any insight on Aaron Rodgers and what he's trying to do? Pat McAfee's like, even if I knew, which I don't, I wouldn't tell you.
yeah, it's so true. We go from analytics to the opposite of analytics, the human eye. Ah, yes, Kyle, it's the eye test here. This is a great story I saw this week about Andre Agassi going up against Boris Becker.
Boris Becker, for an example, who beat me the first three times we played because his serve was something the game had never seen before. Well, I watched tape after tape of him and stood across the net from him about three different times. And I started to realize he had this weird tick with his tongue. I'm not kidding. He would go into his rocking motion, his same routine. And just as he was about to toss the ball, he would stick his tongue out. And it would either be right in the middle of his lip or it would be to the left corner of his lip. So if he's serving in the deuce court and he put his tongue in the middle of his lip, he was either serving up the middle or to the body. But if you put it to the side, he was going to serve out wide. The hardest part wasn't returning a serve. The hardest part was not letting him know that I knew this. So I had to resist the temptation of reading his serve for the majority of the match and choose the moments when I was going to use that information on a given point. I told him at Oktoberfest, we went out in Oktoberfest in Germany and had a pint of beer together, and I couldn't help but say, by the way, did you know you used to do this and give away your serve? He about fell off the chair, and he says, I used to go home all the time and just tell my wife, it's like he reads my mind.
He was not reading your mind, Boris. It was the fact that you're jamming your tongue out of your mouth. Now, here's my question, Kyle. I have many of them, but the biggest one is, how the hell do you see the other end of the court, which direction the tongue is pointing?
His eyesight is on point.
That is ridiculous.
Yeah.
I can't even tell if somebody's wearing shoes or they're barefoot from the other end of the court.
It's like those Bo Outlaw glasses. If you like put on the strappy glasses on the court and it's like, I could see your tongue. I can see your tongue. But I love that clip because it's the reason why I love individual sports, right?
Yeah.
I love team sports as well. Football, hockey, basketball, right? But individual sports, I love that. Because that mentality can only be used in individual sports. If you went to your coach and said, hey, the point guard on the other team, he sticks his tongue out every time they run the pick and roll and they run it to this side. So let's jump it. And then we can just trap him out on the perimeter. And the coach can be like, yeah, that sounds crazy. We're not going to do that. We're going to do what I say. And Andre Agassi's like, it's only me out there. Screw them. I'm following this. Yeah. And it worked for him.
Yeah, absolutely. The last one that I got for you here in the Friday house party. Do you remember the We Believe Warriors, Kyle? Those that beat the number one seeded Mavs in the playoffs when they were the 8 seed?
Baron Davis.
Yeah. So it was B. Diddy. It was Matt Barnes. It was Steven Jackson. They were all in Golden State. And I actually explained this to Marlene the other day because I played this clip for her because I thought this was great. And I said, you have this image of the Warriors as champions, right? Like the blue and the gold and Steph Curry.
They were bad for a long time.
I'm like, man, there was an extended period of time where they were a joke. Like they were bottom of the bottom out there in the West.
They were the Sacramento Kings before Chris Webber and Peja Stojakovic left.
Yeah, that's a good point. So they had Matt Barnes and Steven Jackson. And when they had the We Believe Warriors beat the Mavs, which I remember, I did the math on this. I think I was like 13 or 14 when this happened. And I remember that I looked at this and I thought to myself, wow, I love Dirk Nowitzki. I mean, Michael Finley was on that team. And I'm trying to remember some of the other names. I don't know if
Jason Terry.
Yeah. So the Jet was on that one. And anyways, I enjoyed that Mavericks team. I didn't know anything about this Warriors team. But then you start watching the games that were being played in Oakland. You're like, whoa. And you start to realize, man, that's a crazy environment. And these dudes that were on that team, when they beat the crap out of the Mavs, listen to the celebration that they had, including a reference here to Nelly, who is Don Nelson, which if you know anything about Don Nelson now and what he's doing with his life, then you know that Don Nelson has been spending some time partaking in...
Yeah, I've been smoking some pot.
That was a press conference where they honored Nelly, and they said, what have you been up to? And he said, yeah, I've been smoking some pot. which makes him get along very well with the guys here, again, from the All the Smoke podcast. Listen to this celebration and some of the name drops in this.
We beat the Dallas Mavericks, man.
Beat the shit out of them at that.
First number 8 seed to knock a number 1 seed out in a 7-game series.
Unconscious.
So we go to Jack's house, you know, drink, smoke. There was a couple of us. Who was there?
Baron had Kay Hudson, Jessica Alba.
And what's his name?
Owen Wilson.
Owen Wilson.
Owen Wilson was there as well. So the party started at my house.
So then we go upstairs. So we chill at Jack's, then we go upstairs. So Nelly has the whole floor at Jack's complex. What floor are you on? Like 17?
I was on 11.
11?
He had the roof.
He had the whole penthouse.
The whole
roof was his. As soon as we get in there, Nelly shouts.
This is all you hear.
Fellas! Woody Harrelson's in the back rolling doobies. And we look at each other like, what the fuck? That's our coach. I mean, he was always cool. He knew we smoked, but it wasn't. I didn't know he didn't care that everyone else knew. So another person that happened to be in town was Snoopy. He came to the game.
He told me double G.
And he told me to hit him when we get done. So I hit Snoop, and he, you know, and Snoop, roll, pull up, nephew. So we go to the Ritz-Carlton in San Francisco. This is when he had just dropped the blue carpet treatment. So
Ritz-Carlton now.
The Ritz.
Remember what hotel we said we're going in?
We in there. Obviously, we start smoking. So all Snoop would do was Snoop would break the shit up, roll it, hit it one time, pass it.
50 boxes of Swishers.
And start going on another one. We had like 2 blunts in our hands, getting one pass to us. Like it was the most epic smoking session ever, like crazy. My sister got so high, she didn't even smoke. She passed out from a contact high, just fell asleep on the couch. And then we ordered everything off the menu.
So this is the crazy part. So room service brings the food in, right? The room is, I'm talking about,
barely can't.
You can't see it, so smoked out. Remember, we in the Ritz-Carlton. After they bring the food, they leave out. They come right back and knock on the door. So, you know, when you hear that knock, you think you smoking.
A hard knock.
I'm looking at Snoop like.
Because we still in season. As players, when you hear that heavy knock, like that police knock, it's like, fuck.
Oh, shit. God damn. Here's security.
Like they towed on us.
We in the Ritz-Carlton.
They towed on us.
Man, these motherfuckers come in the room. Excuse us, how y'all doing? Open windows.
Unscrew.
Unscrewing the windows. They make it.
Open the windows just so the smoke can go out.
Only for Snoop.
Told us, good gang. What's up, Snoop? Let them know if we need anything.
We get that knock, they come and pull our ass out the room. Throw us out the hotel.
I'm gonna try to go scale the side of the hotel wall and hide.
With Snoop, they come open the windows for him, the lock windows, and let the smoke out.
Unscrewed windows in the Ritz.
Unscrewed windows in the Ritz, the punchline to that story, as you end up having Snoop just running anything that he wants in California because they're just like, thank you, Mr. Snoop. Also probably helped how much money he was spending in order to have that room, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm sure David Stern would love to hear that. He's no longer with us, but geez, David Stern just, if he were alive today and heard that story, he'd be like, what the hell were you guys doing?
How did I not have my testers right at the front door of that? How did I not? It's not like it was a big secret. He should have just been following them. They would have led you to the huge weed party with those guys, obviously. So anyways, yeah. All right, let's get in the 3-minute warning.
Get ready. Let's go. A little urgency. Here we go. Let's go.
We're almost out of here. This is the 3-minute warning brought to you by.
It's going to be brought to you by Kyle. You got anybody that you want to be the presenting sponsor today of the 3-minute warning here on Marshmallow?
We mentioned him earlier, Carlo Macaluso and OffTheTee.ca.
There you go. Nice. I saw some videos of him the other day on Instagram practicing chipping during lockdown in Ontario. He just went to some random field.
He went to a park.
Yeah. he was just working on his game, trying to hit some flop shots, it looked like.
Turn golf courses back on, please, please.
yeah, I would like that too. I actually would like to get out and hit. I'd like to go to like a driving range or something when
closed down too.
I know, but when possible. Like, if everybody, think about how bad everyone's going to be at golf, even the casual people, if there's no driving ranges and we hit golfing season and things go back to normal and we're all vaccinated. It's like, hey, it's July or August and we have these tournaments. There are going to be so many people yelling four and we're all going to blame Dougie. That's what's going to happen. Doug's going to be responsible for all the lost golf balls.
I'll tell you what. I am worried when golf courses open back up, it's going to be impossible to get a tee time. And I worry that the prices for a round of 18 are going to be more expensive because golf courses are trying to make up for the losses during the lockdown.
Yeah, and supply and demand, right? I mean, there's only so many tee times available per day, and they're going to have to still be by some mandates. So that's going to do it for us today. Fun CFL draft recap. Kyle, what do you got going on this weekend?
I don't even know. Actually, me and my girlfriend started watching have you watched the Below Deck sailing yacht? It's
no.
Not your type of show. It's like a reality show. It's about a bunch of young adults working on a yacht, and all these rich people come on the boat as they set sail in like Europe and Greece and all these countries, and chaos ensues. So we just started watching that, so we'll probably dive into that. And Formula One, doesn't it return this weekend?
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah. my weekend is going to be, aside from Mother's Day, and of course I am now the father of a child, and so I will be trying to flourish my fiance with gifts and showering and cards and breakfast and things of that nature. But outside of that, yeah, F1 is back in Spain. Very excited about that. Barcelona, it's where they do their off-season testing in a normal year. This year they did it at Bahrain, but they've got an opportunity there to get some quick laps down, have some fun. It's a tricky track. It really is. They put the chicane in at the end that I didn't think they really needed to that long ago, but it's going to be a fun one. It was a great race in Portugal, I thought, last weekend as well. So there's that. And the other thing is I'm going to have an article coming out on CFL.ca and CFPerspective.com this week, this coming Monday, that is going to be all about Russ Jackson's Grey Cups. So I will be watching 1960, 1966, 1968, and 1969 Grey Cups over the next couple of days, and getting those all aligned, and then give you a breakdown of those, have some fun. And I'm hoping that I can create my target charts and I can deliver them framed to Russ Jackson. I want to give him like a little 8x10 with his 4 Grey Cups and the targets, because I'm pretty sure nobody's ever shown him where he actually threw the ball. And I think Russ is also fully vaccinated, last I had heard from somebody. So that's pretty cool as well, because he's, 84, 85 years old, something like that. So.
And I've always been, we had a discussion, probably a month ago about people when they get their vaccine, posting pictures of themselves. And I'm fine with it if you want to do it. I'm just not from that, mentality of I got to post my life on social media.
Yeah.
But I will say this. Your boy's getting vaccinated next Friday.
Nice. Congrats. That's awesome.
First shot.
It's weird. You're a Joe Rogan podcast listener and you decide to get a vaccine. That's crazy.
Wow. Man. It's a shock that I don't listen to everybody on every single thing under the sun, right? I can have some nuance and think for myself, unlike some people in the world.
Perfect way to end the pod. Thanks for listening, everybody. We do appreciate it. Don't forget, get your Soda City beer. Go to sodacitybeer.com. Use the promo code CFP during checkout. Free shipping on all orders over $100. Shipping available to Ontario residents only and must be of legal drinking age. We will talk to you next week right here on Canadian Football Perspective.
Let's see if we can make some lemonade out of this lemon that we're in the middle of. Turn a red light into a green light. Just keep living.